Morning. Today's daf in Zvachim Sadi Dal. We're in Sadi Gimel. We are going to be starting this morning from the Mishnah. We're on the Mishnah in Sadi Gimel. I'm in Aleph, which is a little bit behind. We're talking about Dam Chatzis, the blood of Chatzis, and the requirement of Kibbutz to have to launder it out of the clothing. There are many details to this particular halacha. So as many of the details we're going to say regarding this halacha, I did a little bit of research last night. I don't have a rishon stating a reason as to why there's a mitzvah of kibbutz, but that mitzvah, the reason of why, really secondary in the discussion of the Gemara, not even secondary, just simply not a discussion. But as far as the Mishnah and Gemara is concerned, so they're just establishing what the parameters of this mitzvah, of this halacha is, that you gotta launder out the blood. So the blood of a carbon chatas sprinkles on clothing, so it has to be laundered. So up until now, the first sugya, Tzadi Beis Amid Alf, the beginning of the 11th parak, talked about which blood requires sprinkling. So the Mishnah told us that it has to be something which is kosher, not pasul. Exactly, when we say pasul, we mean pasul even from the very beginning, or if let's say it had a shasa kosher, it was eligible, and then it becomes pasul. So that was the machlokes between the Mishnah and the Braisa. When I say the Braisa, I mean Rabbi Akiva. So that was one. Interestingly enough, we noted the other day that Levi takes a position. Levi says, "I hold like Rabbi Akiva." In other words, he's paskin halacha that is post chorban by Sheni, and he's taking a position on the matter. It's hilchos of the Mashicha. Anyway. The Gemara yesterday was a tough daf. Yesterday was a difficult sugya, as the Gemara went over some questions that the Amoraim had regarding the blood. What if the blood gets sprinkled? What if the blood ricochets from one garment to another garment? What if the blood were to land on a garment which is tame? So that means that the blood now becomes tame, and now when the blood hits the garment, so sequentially or concurrently, that's what we discussed yesterday, the blood now is going to become tameh, and so does it become eligible or ineligible for this halacha of kibbutz? That was the discussion yesterday. Okay, we are inside the Gimel and Aleph. We're at the Mishnah Nitas Menat Safar. So now we talked about the qualification, disqualification of blood, and now we're going to be talking about at what point during the avoda is when chatzis blood sprinkles on your clothing, you're required to launder it. And that's what we're going to learn in our Mishnah. And before we say the Mishnah, let's say it over really simple. The halacha is very straightforward. We'll see it all in the Mishnah. The Mishnah is going to be a little repetitive in nature, and the Gemara is going to wonder why. But the halacha is actually pretty straightforward. From the time of Kabbalah, when the time that you receive the blood, until Hazan, until you actually sprinkle the blood, so from point A to point B, which I just described, so if that blood now comes on the clothing, it requires kibbutz, you have to launder it. And any time beforehand, anytime afterwards, there's no requirement of kibbutz. None of this special requirement of kibbutz. That's the halacha. That's very straightforward. We're going to see it together in the Mishnah. Nitas min atzavra ala beged einotam kibbutz. If it goes from the neck of the animal onto your clothing, there's no requirement of kibbutz. Because again, it's pre-Kabbalah sakli. Before it entered into your kli. Min hakeren min yasod einotam kibbutz. Now, if it's from the keren or from the yasod, and then from there ricochets onto the clothing, once again, einotam kibbutz, there's no requirement of kibbutz. Because it's simply too late, meaning you've already sprinkled it. A careful reading of the Mishnah over here, min hakeren min hayasod. So the keren, I understand. The yasod is harder to understand. Because keren is, in other words, that's the first application of the dam chatos. Actually, we've discussed time and again, dam chatos is going to be sprinkled on four kronos. Of the four kronos, the first one is critical, and the other three are la mitzvah, certainly a requirement, but in other words, but not ma'akiv, not critical. So over here, when we say Karen, presumably what we mean is the first Karen. The problem with the Mishnah, or the challenge of the Mishnah, is that it also says the word Yesod. Now, by the time the blood is getting to the point of Yesod, we're already up to the Shayari Hadam, meaning that means that you did the four applications on the four corners, and now you are taking whatever leftover blood there is, and you're pouring onto the Yesod HaMizbech. That's the Shayari Hadam. Now, at this point in time, it's well beyond application, meaning we're past the four applications, and it's the Shayari Adam is not critical. The only thing that we discussed as a possibility of being critical is Chatos Panimios, the inner Chatos, where their Shayari Adam may or may not be critical. We discussed that earlier. But in other words, by the outer chatas, certainly it's not critical. So when the Mishnah over here says the word yesod, so that's a little bit challenging because seemingly that's already past the point of being critical. This question, which I'm raising right now, if you remember, the Gemara asked a long time ago, meaning back on Daf Lamites. I know that because Rashi over here directs me back to the Gemara and Daf Lamites. So this is a question that the Gemara raised some time ago in the Masechta. Okay. Nishpach ala ritzba v'asba in tam kibus. If it falls onto the floor and you collect it, so there's no requirement of kibus because it fell from the floor before landing into a kli sharis, and that blood is just simply not eligible for zrika. And then the Mishnah reviews slash repeats that the only requirement of kibbutz of laundering is only blood that was accepted into a kli sharif and royal zrika and fit to be sprinkled onto the mizbech. Or I should read a little bit more clear, royal hazah. Okay, good. The Gemara starts off, Tan Rabban Yachonitas Minetzavar Labegye Tam Kibbutz. The Bryce over here starts with a Havamina. I might have thought that before the blood enters into the Kli Sharis, if that blood now spritz onto your clothing, that there is this requirement of Kibbutz. Tam Lamar Asher Yazet. Lamar Tlecha Ela Beroy Lahazah. It has to be fit for Hazah. It's only fit for Hazah only after it enters into the Kli Sharis. Tan Yidach, another Bryce Yachol. What if it ricochets off the keren or off the yesod onto your clothing? There may be, I might have thought that there should be a requirement of kibbutz, and the drush is coming to tell me, no, that's too late. Asher yazeh, we're going to sprinkle it, excluding shikvar huzah, where it was already sprinkled. Nishbach ala ritzba, the brisa continues, we're now on the top of Tzadik Gimel Amud Beis. If it goes on the floor, sulamali, meaning the Mishnah, now the Gemara is pointing out that the Mishnah seems to be a little bit verbose. The Mishnah is giving us details which we already knew. So what's the Mishnah now coming to teach me? So amatam kamar. So the Gemara says, no, the Mishnah over here, the way to understand the Mishnah is that the Mishnah is just simply explaining itself. Matam nishbach ala ritzba v'asfo ein tam kibus. Why is it that if it falls onto the floor and you pick it up and it splatters onto your clothing, there's no requirement to keep us lefish ain't town, keep us el adam shen eskaba bekli v'ray lahazaya. In other words, the Mishnah is giving the example and then the Mishnah is giving the explanation. The explanation to the example is because it's not fit for hazaya. If it goes directly from the neck of the animal to the floor, it's not fit for hazas hamizbech, and therefore it does. There's no requirement of kibbutz. Rai lahazah lamute mai lamute kibah pachus mechdei hazayah bechlizeh upachus mechdei hazayah bechlizeh. When the Mishnah says rai lahazah has to be fit for hazah, again, at this point in time in the Mishnah, we've already established it has to be fit for hazah. The Mishnah must be referring to an additional halacha. What additional halacha is there to say? So the Gemara over here teases out the following from the Mishnah. Where the Mishnah over here is coming to include the following scenario. Or I should say better, exclude the following scenario. Let's say I accepted in one kli an amount of blood, but it's less than the amount requisite for the hazah for the sprinkling. When did you call it that? And, just give me a second. And we collected in another cup also, pachos michtei hazayah. Ditanya, and the Gemara over here now quotes a braisa, establishing whether or not there is this requirement of a base minimum amount of blood that needs to be received in a kli. The Tanya Gemara quotes the following brayso. Rabbi Chalafta Bar Shaul Amar Kiddush Pachus Mechdei Hazaya Bechlizeh Pachus Mechdei Hazaya Bechlizeh Lo Kiddush. Okay, now, to make sure that we understand, this drasha of Rabbi Chalafta is not talking about blood, but rather he's talking about mechatas. So once again, it seems to be a popular topic in Zvachim, And there's a lot of comparison notes between the halachas of the mechatas and the halachas of dam. And in the chatas, by the way, we totally understand because there's both a hazaa requirement. There's a sprinkling requirement. Albeit, of course, it's very different. One's for tumat tahara, the other one's for kachim. But still, the act itself is an act of hazaa, an act of sprinkling. So when it comes to the mechatas, so let's say we accepted in one, Kiddush pachos mechdei hazayah bechlizeh, upachos mechdei hazayah bechlizeh. So let's say less than a sprinkling amount went into one kli, and less than a sprinkling amount went into another kli. So lo kidesh. So you have not invested it with the kedusha, with the necessary sanctity, in order so that it'd be eligible for azah. I mean, in order to sprinkle on somebody to remove the tumas meis. Fine. That's the halacha as it relates to the mechatas. Now, where is this halacha being generated from? Is it in a pasuk in the Torah? And the answer, of course, is no. Meaning that the Torah does not mention anywhere a requisite amount regarding the mechatas. Whenever we have a halacha that relates to shiurim, where do we get shiurim from? So it's halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim. The Gemara in Sukkah in the first parak, right, Dav Zayin, the Gemara over there says that all shiurim are halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim. So this requirement that there is a base amount for mechatas, that's halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim. But we have it. We have halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim. Now, ibailu b'dam mahu. So the Gemara says, okay, so now that we have an halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim regarding the mechatas, and so now here comes the next step. Do we now, can we transfer over the halachas from the mechatas over to dam chatas? Okay? I know the word chatas over here is a little bit misleading because mechatas, paraduma. Dam chatas, the carbon chatas. But can we now translate the halachas over from mechatas to dam chatas? And the Gemara over here articulates the point really clearly. Hilchasahi, umehilchasa lo gamrinan. On one hand, it's halach l'Moshe Mitzrayim. And you cannot generate another halacha from halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. Is the nature of halacha Moshe Mitzrayim such that it is a halacha but localized and cannot be used to serve as a precedent? Meaning we know that one of the Yigim Amidah Shatar Nishashas Behem is Binyanav. We have a precedent. And so therefore, if the halacha is true over here, we're going to take it to a similar scenario and apply it over there as well. That's Binyanav. We operate with that all the time. But when it comes to halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, the Gemara right now is entertaining the thought that it doesn't work that way. That halacha is not generated through a binyanav when it comes to halacha Moshe Mitzrayim.
Can we learn from Chatasov, though?
Huh?
Can we learn from Chatasov? There's no way you're getting as much blood out of Chatasov that you are.
Understood. Understood. I don't know. I don't know. Oh, Dilma, so my time dichsiv etava b'mayim. The Gemara says, or maybe no, maybe it can be generated because when we talk about the sprinkling for the may for the mechatas, for that's the paraduma. So the Torah says v'tava b'mayim. So look at the verb. The Torah says that you dip it in the water. Hachanamiksiv v'tava b'dam. And when it comes to the carbon chatas, the Torah uses the exact same word. Tvila v'tava b'dam. So perhaps now the halacha regarding a minimum, base minimum amount, which we know is true regarding the mechatas, we know because of halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, so maybe the same thing is true regarding dam chatas as well, that there's a base amount. Tashma, the Gemara says, let's see. I'm Rav Zuka, I'm Rav Elazar, af badam lo kidesh. So the Gemara quotes in the name of Rebbe Elazar. Now, presumably here it's the Amori Rebbe Elazar, but still, he must have had this as a Masora. So af badam lo kidesh, that it does not become sanctified with blood, meaning that he has a Masora that when it comes to blood, there has to be a requisite amount, there has to be a shear, and so the Gemara doesn't cite another opinion on the matter. Presumably, the Gemara concludes that regarding blood, there is a base minimum amount. And so, therefore, if I'm a kabbal less than a shear in one coast and less than a shear in another coast, so at that point in time, it's not it's not going to be enough in order to have a hazar requirement. And let's now put it back in the context of our discussion. If such blood falls on the clothing, there's no requirement of kibbutz. There's an interesting Rashi, which I'll highlight over here. Rashi writes, "Bedamai." Rashi earlier, when addressing when the Gemara first entertained the question, what would be the halacha regarding blood if I put less than a shear in one cup, less than a shear in another cup? Rashi writes as follows, "Bedamai, gabe chatzos apnim is kibbutz pachus mechde azaya." So interesting thing that comes out of Rashi is that Rashi says we're not necessarily talking about the outer chatzos, we're talking about the inner chatzos. Now, that wasn't perfectly clear from the Gemara, but Rashi says that's the discussion. In the context of our discussion, it's a little bit easier to hear in that in the inner chatas, there's much more sprinkling to be done. In fact, with the outer chatas, there really is no sprinkling to do. In other words, with the outer chatas, like we described many times, you stick your finger in the blood and you apply it to the actual four corners. So there's no sprinkling per se by the inner by the outer chatas. Sprinkling is only by the inner chatas. When you get to the inner chatas, so what you're doing is by sticking your finger into the blood, you are now sprinkling, literally sprinkling, physically sprinkling it in the direction of the parochas. So interesting point number one from Rashi is that we're talking about the chatas epidemios. When we're having this discussion of a base minimum amount of blood to be collected for sprinkling. Furthermore, says Rashi, same Rashi, Gabi chatas epidemios kibo pachos mechtei azaya, v'chazer v'irev, mihavi kabbalah olo. And really interesting, Rashi says, I'll tell you how far the question is really going. Meaning, is it that if I collect less than a requisite amount in one kli, and less than a requisite amount in another kli, and then even says Rashi, if I take the two kelim and I put them together, so now that I have the full amount, maybe still what the Gemara is now entertaining is that that's not going to be good enough. And why wouldn't that be good enough? Because the Kabbalah Saddam demands that I mekabel the full amount in one cup. That's what it seems like from Rashi, that when the Gemara is entertaining this question, it's even entertaining where I take the two cups and I mix them together, and still the Kabbalah was not successfully done because it wasn't collected all in one cup. Okay.
So if you drop that blood, collect it again, put it back, yeah, that's no good?
Right. In other words, if you collected the blood and it spills on the floor and then you picked it up again, we said that's good. But over here, it's a deficiency, it's a chisaron in the actual Kabbalah itself. Mm-hmm. Meaning that for Kabbalah to get a check for Kabbalah, you have to be mekabel the whole shear within one cup. That's certainly what the Gemara sounds like according to Rashi, or at least what the Gemara is entertaining.
Does the letter of the donor have anything to do with this?
I don't think so. Amarava, the Gemara continues. Tanya, we learned in the following Braisa. Now this should sound familiar. We did this a long time ago, right? A month and a half ago in the daf, we covered this discussion. V'taval, so he has to dip v'lo misapeg. In other words, when the Kohen has to dip his finger into the blood, so it has to go into the blood. So v'taval v'lo misapeg, meaning he can't just simply wipe his finger on the side of the bowl. Badam, acheh badam shir tefila. You need the requisite amount for tefila, and miikaro minadam. I'm sorry, miikaro minadam minadam shebeinyan. And then there's one more point to be made, is that is the hizam and adam, you sprinkle from the blood, shibe inyan. What does that mean? Again, let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi writes over here, shibe inyan, midam ha'amor b'inyan, tvila. Shihizam mimenu rishona, yaze es kulan. The way you sprinkle the first is the way you're going to sprinkle all of them. What does that mean? Rashi writes, shetzarech lachzor ulitbobo etzbo akol hazaya. That what the Kohen needs to do is the Kohen needs to dip his finger in every time and sprinkle. So, the Kohen is going to be sitting there in the Heichal with the Dam of the Chatzis Epidemius. He's going to stick his finger in the bowl, sprinkle. Then go back into the bowl, sprinkle. Go back into the bowl and sprinkle. And, and by the way, it sounds a lot better now that this idea that you need a shear because you're going back in, you're dipping your finger in every time. So you need a full shear for all. Now, there's seven sprinklings to the Paroches. And there's going to be another. Well, that's Yom Kippur. Right now we're talking about a quote unquote a regular chatzis pinimius. Okay, so I don't. It's seven and four. Seven towards the parochas and four on the mizbeach panimi. So the itzrich lemichta b'dam. I'm sorry. Mikar min adam shebeinyan. And now, so we have three halachas that we learned together. That number one, when the Kohen sticks his finger in, he's got to stick his finger into the blood. Number two is that he can't just simply wipe it on the side of the bowl. And number three is that for every sprinkling, he's got to reinsert his finger into the blood. So the Gemara says as follows: "Badam di kasav rechman v'taval hava min afapav delek ashir." If the Torah just simply said the word v'taval, it would seem to indicate that even if there's not enough blood, tvila miikaro. So kasav, I'm sorry, ashir tvila miikaro. Kasav rechman v'badam. V'kasav rechman v'badam. And if the Torah just simply said the word badam hava min afilu misapeg, I might have thought that just wiping on the side of the bowl would be enough. Because Rachmana v'taval min hadam. I'm sorry, v'taval. So that's why the Torah has to add the word v'taval, meaning that it is not sufficient for the Kohen to wipe his finger on the side of the bowl, but he must insert his finger directly into the bowl. And min hadam shebe'inyan lemu'ute mai. Now, dam shebe'inyan, what is that coming to exclude? Amarev lemu'ute shiraim shebe'etzba. Any leftover blood on his finger. Meaning, here's the halacha. The halacha is that when the kohen is going to be sprinkling, when the chatzos panim is in the heichal, so you dip your finger into the bowl, directly into the bowl, not on the side of the bowl. You are going to be coming out now with a bloody finger. You're going to be sprinkling it in the direction of the paroches. And now, any blood that's left over on your finger, that is not good. That's not eligible. Meaning, the Gemara says, shirayim shebe etzba, that any leftover blood on the finger is going to be disqualified for usage. What are you going to do with it? You're going to wipe it. Where are you going to wipe it on? Stay tuned. Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to say. Here the Gemara quotes B'shem Rabbi Elazar that it's disqualified, like we said, meaning any leftover blood after the sprinkling. So the Gemara quotes the following Braisa, that the let's say some of it gets sprinkled. So Achelo hiza tan kibus. Until you complete the hazaah, there's a requirement of kibus. But mishahiza, but once you complete the hazaah, ain't tan kibus. Now, the Raisa is clearly stating that there's a time where that blood splattered on your clothing requires kibus. There comes a point after that where it does not require kibus. Clearly the Raisa is creating a line in the sand regarding before and after. But my lav hachi kamer, the Gemara says, now what is meant in the Braisa? Presumably, Ashlo gamer melahazos tan kibus, mishigam melahazos ain tan kibus. That means that while you're in the process of all seven of the sprinklings, there is a kibus requirement. After you are completed with the seven sprinklings, so then there is no kibus requirement. The problem with that is, as Rashi explains, is that anytime you're in the middle of the seven, if any blood falls on your clothing, it's going to require kibus or laundering, and presumably even with blood that's left over on your finger. The problem is that we just quoted in the name of Rava, in the name of Rebbe Lazar, that shirayim shebe etzba, that any leftover blood on your finger is puzzle. It's not good for hazar, and if it's not good for hazar, then there's no kibus requirement. So the Gemara says we're going to have to reinterpret the braisa. Hachi kamar. Ashalayatza hazam miyado tan kibus. Mishiyatza hazam miyado ain't tan kibus. So now we're reinterpreting the braisa. Here's pshat in the braisa. I dip my finger in the blood. I have not yet sprinkled with this dipping. So any of this blood now that's on my finger, if it goes on my clothing, it's going to require kibus. Once I sprinkle, any of the blood that's still stuck to my finger. Now, obviously, we're talking about blood. It's very thick. It's very sticky. There is going to be blood left on your finger. But that is shayare hadam, that's leftover blood from a hazah, from any of the hazahs. And that shayare hadam, it's puzzle. And therefore, if that goes on your clothing, that does not require kibus. The braisa here is talking about each and every hazah. Abaye challenges based on the following. We have a braisa that when you conclude with your hazah, now Rashi over here tells us that this goes back to the para aduma, right? Gamar milhazos b'maseches para. Rashi takes us back to para aduma, Tanan. He quotes the Mishnah in Para, in Masechta Para. Lo gamar, I'm sorry, Tanan La. Gamar melahazo zayin hazos, shemazah bahar mishcha. You're on the Har Mishcha on the Mount of Olives. And you are sprinkling seven directions from the blood of the Para Aduma. Now remember, the Para Aduma is a really unusual carbon in that I call it a carbon, it's not a carbon. Because it's somewhere stuck in the middle between a carbon and non-carbon. Now, it's obviously not a carbon because you're shechting it outside the base of Mikdash. And you can't do that for anything.
Why does kibbutz matter
It's not a question of kibbutz. It's just a question of shayari hadam. In other words, how to view shayari hadam, right? We're just talking about eligibility or ineligibility of any of the leftover blood after sprinkling. The halach is regarding the paradum in terms of preparing the animal. You shech the animal outside on the Har Mishcha by the Mount of Olives, facing the base of Mikdash, and the Mishnayos over there tell us that there is actually a viewpoint while standing on Har Mishcha that you can actually see into the Pesach Ohel Moed, and then after shechting it, you're going to be collecting the blood and you're going to be sprinkling it in the direction of the base of Mikdash seven times. Now the Mishnah over there writes, and this is now what Rashi is quoting. Gamar melahaza zayin hazaos shemazeh bahar mishcha keneged pitzchos shehechal kidichsiv el nochach penei olam oed. What do you do with any of the blood that's left over? Mekanech yada begufa shel parah. Rashi writes, she'af dama tam streifa. The blood of such an animal requires streifa. We know regarding the paraduma that after you shecht it, and after the hazah, it's going to get burnt. What do you do with the blood after you sprinkle? You wipe it on the animal. The Torah says that the entire animal gets burnt. The hide, the meat, the blood, even the insides, so the right the excrement that's found inside the animal, all of it is going to get burnt. So you wipe it on the gufa shel parah, you can wipe it on the animal itself. So gamar in lo, gamar lo. Now, a simple reading of the Mishnah would seem to indicate that only after you conclude all seven sprinklings do you wipe. But in the interim, you don't wipe. And once again, if we're going to go with the rule of Rav, and the rule of Rav Elazar, that shayare dam, that after each and every sprinkling, any blood left over on your finger is puzzle, so then shouldn't there be a wipe each and every time? So amalei gamar mekanech yado begufo shapar, lo gamar mekanech etzba'o. So the Gemara says, okay, you're right. Meaning, we're going to still defend Rav Elazar, we're going to still defend Rava, and we're going to read the Mishnah, we're going to read it just a little more critically. The Mishnah over there says that what you're going to do is at the end of seven, you're wiping your entire hand. At the end of each of the sprinklings, you're going to wipe your finger. And so, agreed.
What are you wiping it on?
Presumably you're wiping your finger on the animal. So in other words, with each and every sprinkling, after you sprinkle, you're going to wipe your finger on the hide of the animal. And then what the Mishnah means at the end is you're wiping your entire hand. Okay, granted. If left to my own devices, I had to read the Mishnah, I wouldn't have read the Mishnah that way. But in the context of the opinions of the Amoraim, which the Gemara seems to clearly accept and adopt, so you go back to the Mishnah Par, you have to reread the Mishnah Par, which the Gemara just did. Now, Bishlam Gamar Mekanech Yad Begufa Shel Parah Shenem V'Seraf Etzapar Le'inav El Etzbaba Man Mekanech. The Gemara says, okay, what are you wiping your finger on? So Amar Abaye Bisfas Mizra Kedichsiv Kipuri Zahav. So the Gemara says that as it relates to wiping your finger, what are you wiping your finger on? So Rashi over here says, I'll tell you why it's not a good suggestion to wipe your finger on the animal. Now, I know just a moment ago we suggested it, but Rashi says, I'll tell you why it's not a good suggestion. Bamei kanech, Rashi writes, begufa shel parah lo matzis amat shelichlech etzbo begufa parah v'yidbeko bo nimim. Because the animal's dirty, right? And what's going to happen is that you're going to be wiping your finger and a bunch of hairs are now going to stick to your finger and it's just, your finger's going to get dirty. And therefore what? Maybe pasnish, maybe just inappropriate. In other words, but I'll say hygienic. I don't really mean hygienic, but from a cleanliness standpoint, so it's not good to wipe your finger on the animal in between each of the azaz. So you wipe it on the side of the bowl, side of the could be. I'll entertain that. I don't know, but I can entertain that. So Kippuri Zahav Rashi Gabi Klisharis Ksiv B'Sefer Ezra Vehin Mizarkin Va'al Shem Shemekanech Bo Etzbo Karele Kippure. Bowls are actually referred to as kippur. The word mechaper literally means to wipe. So lashon v'chiper yada denir and kesar. Rashi over here quotes the Gemaras as we're approaching Tisha B'Av. By the way, these are the Gemaras that we're going to be learning around Tisha B'Av time. So v'chiper yada denir and kesar. He's wiping his hands clean, right? So the word kippur means to wipe. Okay. Atkan, that takes us to the end of that sugya. Continue.
These are just applying to just the blood of chatat, not all or nothing else. Like, there's no need for kibbutz for...
There's no other carbon where we have this hazav requirement, where I'm taking my finger and I'm sprinkling it.
For ola you do.
For ola, no, the...
Side, penimi ola.
There's no ola penimi. Okay. Okay. Nitaz ala or ad shelo hufshat eintan kibbus. Okay. If the blood gets sprinkled on hide before the hide is removed from the animal. Before I start with this Mishnah, okay, let me just back up for a moment. The Torah, again, we go back to the Parsha in Sav and we look at the pasuk regarding this requirement of kibbus. So again, the Torah doesn't speak much to this idea as we get one entire pasuk in the Torah treating us to this idea that you have to launder But the Torah, however, does certainly clue us in terms of what the Torah is interested in. So the Torah says that in order for there to be a kippus requirement, it has to land on a beged. Now, whenever the Torah says the word beged, beged means what? So beged means clothing. And to be even more, to think more halachically, when we talk about begadim as it relates to the Torah, generally speaking, what materials are we describing when we talk about a beged? So there really are two materials that the Torah speaks to when it speaks about a beged. We see this when it comes to shatnez, we see it when it comes to tzitzis as well. There are only two real beged materials, and that's wool and linen. So wool and linen are the two beged materials. So so ostensibly, the requirement of kibbutz is only regarding when the blood comes onto a clothing that is either made up of wool or linen. And also in the context, just to support this even further, in the context of the Beis HaMikdash, I mean, who's doing the avoda? We know Kohanim. What clothing are they wearing? The Torah is very specific about the type of clothing they're wearing. They're wearing clothing that are made up of either wool or linen, and in some cases, both. Okay, right. So so clearly in the context of everything, if left again left to our own devices, if we had to figure out what kind of garment requires this special halakha of kibbutz, so we would have said wool and linen. What we're going to be learning together in the course of our next sugya is that it's not just limited to wool and linen; it's also going to apply to other begadim as well, other clothing made up of other materials.
How do they make it there? The begadim. How do you make it there?
Yeah, what are they doing in the azara?
Yeah.
That's an excellent question. I don't know. Okay, it's fine. It's fair. It's a fair question.
Well,
so
maybe Levim are involved.
Could be. I could be. That's a good question. The question that Hedy's asking is, what are the other clothing doing in the Azara itself? Okay. So, but what we're going to learn together is that in order for there to be a kibbutz requirement, it can land on in clothing. A material doesn't have to be made up of wool and linen. It could be made up of another material as well. But here's the catch.
Is it only on the Kohanim, though? Is this mitzvah only on the Kohanim?
No, in other words, it's
not.
Right, correct. I'm just saying contextually, we're in the Azara, we're only Kohanim are there for the most part. They're wearing the Begadim. Their Begadim is made up of wool linen. The Torah says the word Beged. Again,
you have others in the Azara.
Correct. Okay, so it could be on other materials, but here's the catch. The catch is it has to be a bona fide Beged. It has to be an article of clothing. And what do I mean by that? So here we get to the halachas of Tumah Tahara. Meaning a beged is a finished product. A raw material beged, which is not a finished product, is not considered a beged. It's not going to be mekabel tumah. It won't be susceptible to tumah. It has to be a beged, a finished product. Where we're going later this morning is where the Gemara is going to be discussing clothing that is somewhere between raw material and a finished product. But that's coming up later. We're going to get to those Gemaras in just a moment. Nitas ala or. Now, let's say it gets on the hide of an animal. Now, we're in the Azara. There are a lot of hides of animals going around over here. But if it is not been flayed off the animal, there's no requirement of kibbutz. That is clearly a raw material. Right? Hard to conceptualize anything that's more raw material than the hide that's still on the animal. Now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, once the hide is flayed off the animal and then the blood falls on that hide, there is a requirement of kibbutz. Meaning, according to the Shita of Rav Yehuda, even though it's not yet been processed, the hide itself has gone through no processing, still there's a requirement of kibbutz even as it lands on the hide of the animal. Just provided, says Rav Yehuda, that has to be flayed off the animal. Rebbe Lazar Amar Af Mishahuf Shanein Taon Kibbutz. So, and Rebbe Lazar is of the opinion that even after you flayed off the animal, there is no kibbutz requirement. Because it's not yet a processed piece of material. Rashi writes over here, calls Mashalo nitkan lios kli ein taun kibbutz to be in a davra mekabel tumah. In other words, for a garment to have this kibbutz requirement, it has to be a beged. Beged means a finished product, something that's mekabel tumah. So over here, it's not just because I flayed it off the animal, okay, but it's still unprocessed, and therefore there's no kibbutz requirement. So ella makom, I'm sorry. Let me go back. Ain't on kibbutz ala makom hadam. Another halacha in the as far as the removal of the blood from any garment is that you only need to do spot treatment. In other words, you only need to do kibbutz on the area where the blood is. You don't have to throw the entire garment into the wash. I don't mean that literally, okay? I don't think they had washing machines back then, but they only need to do kibbutz on the area itself, on the blood area itself. Not only is something which is fit to be mekabel tumah. The Gemara later on will point out this line of the Mishnah, obviously is a shout out to the Shita of Rebbe Elazar that we learned in the beginning of the Mishnah. V'ray lekibbutz, it has to be fit for kibbutz. We'll see what that means later on. Echad abeged, v'echad asak, v'echad aortun in kibbutz. And here the Mishnah tells us that it can be beged. And again, the word beged, generally speaking, means anything made up of wool and linen, wool or linen. It could be beged, could be sack. Now, sack is sackcloth. Now, it took me a while to learn this, but in other words, sackcloth is generally made up of goat's hair. Okay, it's really uncomfortable, but they used to make it for material. The echad or could be made of the hide of animal, leather. Tunin kibbutz, as long as it's a baguette, there is a kibbutz requirement. Ve'a kibbutz b'makam kadosh, where do I do kibbutz? In the azar. Now, we made this point a number of times, but here's the first time we're seeing it in the Mishnah. Shvir's kli cheres b'makam kadosh, also the breaking of kli cheres is done b'makam kadosh in the azar as well. Now, the breaking of kli cheres, which is mentioned in the parsha, we've gone over this a number of times also, so this is not relevant, it's not germane to our Mishnayos, but it comes up over here in the Mishnah just simply because it shares the same halacha that it has to be done in the Azara. Umrika Shtifa Beklina Choshev B'Makum Kadosh, also the koshering of pots and pans also have to be done in the Azara as well. Zeh Chomra Bechatz Mikat Sheh Kadashim, this is a Chomra. Now Rashi says this takes us back to the Kibbutz requirement, meaning what we just learned together in the last couple of lines regarding the breaking of the Kli Cheres, the koshering of copper and metal Kalim. The Mishnah inserts that, but when the Mishnah says the word Zechomer, this is a stringency. We're going back to the Kibbutz requirement. This is a stringency regarding the blood of Chatas, Mikachi Kadashim, as opposed to all other Karbanos. All other Karbanos, blood comes onto the clothing. There is no special Kibbutz requirement. Only when the blood of Chatas lands on the clothing is there a special Kibbutz requirement. So in this Mishnah, we're learning now, in the previous Mishnahs, we were talking about what kind of Dam Chatas. We were going over the parameters of the Dam Chatas. Now, obviously in this Mishnah, we're going over the parameters of the clothing that it lands on. Minan, immediately the Gemara starts off the discussion to Rabbanan. We learned in the Braisa, Beged Ein Li'ala Beged, Minan L'Rabbos, or Misha Hufshat. How do I know hide even after it was, just after it was flayed from the animal, Tam Lamar, Asher Yizeh Aleha Techabes. Yachol Shani Marbe, or Ad Shelo Hufshat, maybe we'll include hide even before it's flayed off the animal, Tam Lamar, Beged. Ma Beged Aroi L'Kabotuma, Afkol Aroi L'Kabotuma, Div Rav Yehuda. So as far as Rav Yehuda is concerned, the parameter of that which requires kibbutz is not that it currently is mekabel tumah, but ro'oi lekabel tumah, as long as it has the potential. And while it's connected to the animal, it's at this point in time, it's too pre-potential. It's too early. In other words, potential over here means that at least it has to be removed off the animal.
No.
It's ro'oi. In other words, at this point in time now, it's unprocessed hide.
Why do you have to do kibbutz if blood goes on?
Because Rabbi Yehuda says that's how he darshans from the pasuk, that it doesn't actually need to be a kli, but as long as it's roi lekabel tumah, as long as it's at a point where it's fit. And Rabbi Lazar Omer Beged Ein Li'ala Beged Minan L'Rabbos Sak, according to Rabbi Lazar, Beged comes to include not only Beged, which as we've described already, Tzemru Pishim, wool linen, but also Sak as well, sackcloth, Minan L'Rabbos Sak, V'chomine Begadim, and any other kind of garment as well. Rashi says silk and other types of materials, Tamlomer Asher Aleha Techabes. So he learns out from the words Asher Aleha Techabes, that as long as it goes on a garment, but the material of the garment is not significant. It can go on any garment. There's a requirement to keep us yachush ani marbe or misha hovshat. What about hide? Even after it was flayed from the animal, tamalomer beged, ma beged davar ha-mekabel tuma, afkol davar ha-mekabel tuma. And according to Rabbi Elazar, the Tana Rabbi Elazar, according to Rabbi Elazar, in order for there to be a kibbutz requirement, it has to be something which is actual mekabel tuma. Not roi lekabel tumah, but actually have the ability to be susceptible to tumah, otherwise known as it needs to be a finished product. So my beinayim. So the Gemara says that according to Rabbi Yehuda, as long as it's Roy Lekabel Tuma, and Rabbi Elazar says, no, it has to actually be Mekabel Tuma. Differences between them would be as follows. Amar Abaye Matlas Pechusa Mishalosh. So here we go now, and we delve into the halachas of Begadim and Kabbalah Satama. So again, let's go back to a point that I made just a little bit earlier. In order for a Begad to be Mekabel Tuma, it has to be a swatch of fabric that is a minimum shear, right? Depending on the actual garment itself, that's going to determine what the shear is. And it has to be a finished product. In other words, it has to be now where there was processing that was done, where this is now the end of the line. It is not going to be processed anymore. What we're going to be discussing in the next couple lines of Gemara is going to be various fabrics and swatches of garments that are almost processed, almost finished, not totally, but if, let's say, the owner of the item had a machshava, had a thought in saying, you know what, this is good, I'm happy with this, I'm comfortable with this, so the machshava is going to be mevi lekabel tuma. If that machshava will bring it to a point of it becoming mekabel tuma, susceptible for tuma. And the Gemara here is going to give three different examples of this idea where it's not a totally finished product, it's almost finished, but with a machshava, it will push it past the point. And here now is going to be the debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Yehuda says that as long as there is potential for it being mekabel tuma, that's enough. Where Rabbi Elazar says, no, potential is not enough. It has to be actually processed and finished. So let's say, for example, here's example number one, Pechusa Mishal Shika Beinahu. Let's say where it's a real small swatch of fabric, it's less than 3x3 etzbaos. Manda Marai Hanamirai, Dibai Chashav Aleha. Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, a machshava could bring it to the point of it becoming fit. What would a machshava do? Let's say I decide it's a really small patch, but I decide, you know what? I happen to have a hole in my garment, and I'm going to use this as a patch for my garment. At that point in time now, it is a finished product, and therefore it's mekabel tuma. Mandam adavra mekabel tuma ha mi'ala bas kibul tumahu. Whereas according to Rav Yehuda, yes, you could have a machshava regarding it, but in its current state right now, it's simply too small. It's not mekabel tuma. And again, that's example number one of the difference between Roy lekabel tuma versus actual mekabel tuma. Example number two of the Gemara, Rav Amar Beged Shechishev Ala Letzura. Let's say it's a finished garment, but right now the owner of the item says, you know what? I would like to embroider it. And I'm not going to use it until it's embroidered. So now there is this thought process by the owner that even though functionally it's finished, but I just like it to look nicer. So I'm going to embroider it. Now, Ika b'na manda marai hana marai, di by mavtil or mebatole lamachshavase. And manda amadava mekabotuma hashtami Allah baski bulatumahi. Here in example number two now, where the owner of the item articulated and said, I'm going to embroider it. So at this point in time, is it mekabotuma? No, because it's not yet finished based on the thought of the owner. So Rabbi Yehuda will tell you, yeah, I know it's not yet finished, but it's Roy lekabel tuma. Because what the owner can now do, even before doing any embroidering, is say, you know what? Cancel. I'm going to cancel my order. I don't want to embroider it. So now with that machshava, now it will be a finished product. So it's Roy lekabel tuma. Whereas according to Rabbi Elazar, no. In other words, as long as now it's not actually mekabel tuma, so then it's not. This is not eligible for kibbutz. Here's the third example. Rava Amar Utzba Dechashiv Leila Katz'a. Let's say you have a piece of hide. Right? Rashi calls it a shetiach. It's like a rug. It's like a throw rug. But over here, a throw rug, Rashi says, shetiach le'echol alav, o lishkav alav. Either I'm going to eat on it or I'm going to lie down on it. V'ruban min ha'or. Most of it's made of hide, says Rashi. Sometimes it's made of fabric as well. And once again, here we go, with basically a spread for either the table or for the bed. Does it need to be cut to perfection? Not really. In other words, you're right, it's usable. You could tuck it underneath. So Ika Banal Manda Marai Hanama Ruya. Now is it Rai Lakabel Tuma? Sure, because I know that generally speaking we're gonna cut around the edges. But if I make the executive decision as the owner, I'm okay with it as it is. So therefore, it could be mekabel tuma. Therefore, it's roi lekabel tuma. And man damer davar mekabel tuma, alav mekabel tuma, ad demekatzei alav. And where Rabbi Elazar says no, Rabbi Elazar says that generally speaking, people cut around in order to finish it off on the edges. And because that's the case, it's not actually Mekabel Tumma. I know it's royally Kabbalah Tumma, but it's not actually Mekabel Tumma, and therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's not eligible for Kibbutz. So, three different examples where we have this idea. V'atanya, the Gemara quotes the Brice, Rabbi Shimon Manasi Omer Utzba Shechishav Allah Lekatza Tahara Ashiyaki Tena. And the Gemara over here quotes a Brice, not a Brice to challenge, but a Brisa supporting exactly this idea. The Brisa quotes in the name of Shimon ben Manasya that if I have this this spread, either for the table or to lie down on, where there's a machshava that we're going to cut it, so it is tahara. Tahara over here means it's simply not eligible for Kabbalah Satoma because it's not yet a finished product. And it only is going to be Mekabel Tumah until you actually cut off the edges. Okay. Ain't telling kibbutz. Let's continue in the Gemara. There's no requirement of kibbutz. Menan milatan rabban yachol nitas al mixas beged yeh kol abeged telling kibbutz. We are discussing the halacha and the mission of spa treatment. You only need to clean. You only need to launder the area the blood is on. There's the Gemara at least entertains the havamina that I need to wash the entire garment. Tamalam rasha yizel lo amar telecha ela mikabel. I'm sorry, ela makum dam belvad. No, the asher yizel tells me that it's only the makum dam. When the Mishnah says that it's something which is susceptible to Tumah, that part of the Mishnah clearly is a shout out to Rabbi Yehuda. Now, it's Raila Kibbutz, something which is fit for laundering, meaning what's that coming to exclude? An actual kli, meaning a utensil. A utensil made up of a hard material, earthenware, metal, wood. So something like that, if blood falls on that, you're not going to do kibbutz, you're not going to do laundering, you're not washing with water, but rather over there, you're scraping it off. Okay. Echad abeged v'echad asak, l'memer d'or bar kibbutzu. Okay, and now we get to a discussion in the Gemara, which in of itself is going to be interesting, but also is going to have halacha l'maisa ramifications. Because what we're going to be starting right now, we're not going to finish this morning, but we're going to start right now with the following discussion. We have just learned together that if the blood of Dam Chatzis falls on a beged, there is a kibbutz requirement. We have also just learned together in the course of this morning that it's not just wool and linen, but it's other clothing material, which includes sackcloth, which also includes leather as well. And what it sounds like now, as we're about to enter into this discussion, is that leather is something which is washable. Now, that's important in terms of the base of Mikdash and knowing what needs what requires kibbutz and what does not require kibbutz. As it relates to you and I, unfortunately, without a base of Mikdash, is that this also will play a role in the discussion of washing leather on Shabbos. Meaning on Shabbos, we know one of the 39 malachas on Shabbos is kibbutz, that we're not allowed to launder. It's one of the 39 malachas. And so now, if we're saying that leather is eligible, it has the requirement of kibbutz for the Dam Chatzis, what we're also saying is that leather is launderable. And if leather is launderable, that means that on Shabbos it would be subject to the laundering malacha. And that means to say if your shoes get dirty, you can't wash your shoes. And when I say wash, I just simply mean even just run water over them. That would be a malacha on Shabbos. Okay, now, I guess if we're just thinking this out loud first before seeing the Gemara inside, like we can even extend the discussion to, well, what if you're just walking in your shoes through puddles of water? Okay, but that gets us to the discussion of Davashim Miskavein. And okay, but let's at least start the discussion this morning. Starts off like this: Echa beged ve'echad asak lemeimah d'or bar kibbutzu v'riminu. Haisa avla alav lashleshes mekancha bismartut. If let's say you had a little bit of dirt on your clothing. Now this takes us to Masechta Shabbos. Rashi over here writes, Masechta Shabbos tanan lo haisa al hakar shel beged, gi'ul shel rok o shel tzoa. So let's say you had on your pillow either some spit or some excrement, mikancho bismartut, b'Shabbos. So what you could do is you could take a shmata and you could wipe it. Rashi says, but here's what you can't do. You can't take water, put water on it. The only thing you could do is you could dry rub it with a shmata. And Rashi continues, v'kibus av malacha hu, hainu malabein. Kibus, laundering, is an av malacha. It falls under the category of malabein. Meaning when you go through the 39 malachas on Shabbos, in the 7th parak of Shabbos, you're not going to see actually the word kibus over there. You're going to see the word malabin, libun. Hainu hach, says Rashi, it's one of the same. Now, here's the challenging part. Let's go back now to the Gemara. If, let's say, there is dirt, any filth on your pillowcase, dry rub it with a rag. However, haisa shel or, if, let's say, your pillow is made up of leather, nosin ala mayim asher techala, so now you could just simply run water on it, and that would be fine. So what we're learning now together in Masechta Shabbos is running water over your hide pillowcase, your leather hide pillowcase, would be fine. Meaning, by extension, that's not kibbutz. It can't be kibbutz. Because if it were kibbutz, it wouldn't be allowed on Shabbos. So it's not kibbutz. So over here, we're stuck. Because vis-a-vis the halachas of Shabbos, we're saying that running water over leather hide pillowcase is fine, meaning it's not kibbutz. And meanwhile, here in the 11th parak of Zvachim, as we're learning the halachas, the special halachas of which garments require kibbutz from the dam chatos, we have learned together that if the blood were to come on hide, on animal hide, on leather, as long as it's a finished product, so then there is a requirement of kibbutz, which means that it's launderable. So in Masechta Zvachim, we're learning that leather is launderable, and in Shabbos, we're learning just the opposite, that leather is not subject to laundering, and therefore it would be fine on Shabbos to run water over it. So it's what's called in halacha a stira. So Amar Rabbi Lokasha Hab Rabbanan Ha'acherim, so the Gemara, so their first approach is that of Abaye, and that is Machlokas Hatanayim. The time of the Gemara quotes the bright side. Begad Vasak Mechapso Akliva or Migarero. That when it comes to a soft fabric, like wool linen, like sackcloth, so there, kibbutz, run it through water. However, something which is hard, like cleva or, like an actual utensil or leather, scrape it off. And according to the opinion of Acherim, they take leather, they move it from second half to first half. Leather is on the same column as wool and linen and sackcloth, meaning it's launderable. So, according to Abaye, it's simply a machlokas hatanayim whether or not leather is subject to kibbutz. The Gemara quotes Rav Chiya Bar Ashi, who says that many times I was in front of Rav, v'shich shechilei misani b'maya. And what I did for him on Shabbos is I ran water over his shoes on Shabbos. Clearly, Rav was not worried about the fact that this is laundering on Shabbos. Clearly. And he allowed it. So, keman kerabanan. So, in other words, so now, if we're going to align Rav's practical halacha to which Tana does he subscribe with, it's very simple. He must hold like the Chachamim, not like Acherim. Acherim take leather and put it under the category of a fabric, which means that's launderable, which means on Shabbos, you're simply not allowed to do it. And meanwhile, according to the Acherim, a leather falls under the category of a keli, of a hard utensil, not subject to laundering, and therefore you can run water on top of it. Okay, so according to Abaye, it's simply a machlokas tanaim. I'll simply point out, by the way, it's interesting, according to Abaye, the opinions over here seem to be totally bifurcated, in that, according to Acherim, where leather is like a kli, it's muta lagamre. And I say muta lagamre because clearly Rav did it. And the other position that says that hide is like beged and sock, which would mean that according to the other opinion, it would be a malacha on Shabbos. So in other words, just a discrepancy between the two positions where, according to one opinion, it's muta lagamre, and according to the other opinion, putting water on leather on Shabbos would be a violation of a malacha. Okay. That's not out of order. It's just that is a wide discrepancy of position. Amar Rava. Let's do a little bit more for today. Amar Rava Mika Laman Damar Or La Bar Kibbutz Uvaksiv Abegad Or Shio O HaErev O Kol Kli Or Asher Tu Chubas. Now Rava points out, look, all this discussion is really well and good. I have a pasuk in the Torah. And the pasuk in the Torah seems to clearly say that leather is launderable. When discussing the begadim for tzarasin, which for tzarasa that falls on clothing, So the Torah says, Habeged, Awa Shasi, Awa Erev, O Kol Kli Or, anything made up of leather, Asher Tuchubas, which is subject to being laundered. The Pasuk in the Torah seems to clearly indicate that leather is subject to laundering. Ela Amarava Kra Umasisen Berachin, Ki Pligi Bekashin. And so the Gemara says, look, we have a Mishnah, we have a Pasuk in the Torah that says that leather is launderable, soft leather, soft processed leather is launderable, not open for any opinion, not open for any debate. And the only machlokus is going to be leather which is hard. Now, leather which is hard, by the way, Rashi points out over here, that also has gone through some processing as well. But in other words, but if it's a soft leather, that is subject to kibbutz. If it's a hard leather, so then machlokus. So the Gemara says, okay, but we got to go back to Rav's practice. Everyone agrees that Rav did it. He had his shoes being rinsed underwater on Shabbos, and he was perfectly fine with it. So bekashim v'karab ukarabanan. So at this point, the Gemara is now suggesting, okay, you know what? It's hard leather. In other words, he was wearing a hard leather shoe, and he was also subscribing to the viewpoint of the Rabbanan. Okay, so now, says the Gemara, Hadam Rav Lav Milsi Hidamre. So Rava says, you know what? I retract. So the Gemara says, because here's what I just did. In other words, I, based on what I thought was a machlokas, so I gave a limited definition of the Torah. And who says I'm right? I'm telling you that the Torah is talking about hide, leather hide being a kli, and now, based on other information, I'm limiting the definition of the Torah to that which is only soft. And meaning to say now that I'm telling you that when you read the pasuk in the Torah, it says that leather is subject to kibbutz. That's only referring to soft leather, and I don't know if I'm right. And milo askinem bekli achsanaya habayim medinas yam v'kamer achmana nibay kibbutz. It could very well be that the Torah is open to being interpreted as hard leather, and still the Torah demands kibbutz. Okay, here Rava gives the example of some sort of leather coming from some sort of country. It's a hard leather, but they somehow convert it into an article of clothing. And maybe the Torah over there requires kibbutz. Ela marava tsaras kevin de megufe kaparcha mechalchala le umashvele rach. So the Rava says, I'll say like this. Even though, yes, we did find a pasuk in the Torah, but we could suggest as follows. That, look, obviously it's talking about leather, and it's talking about that's launderable, but it's also within the context of tsaras. And it could very well be that over there, just by the nature of tsaras, what happens is the tsaras comes out, and it softens the leather. Now, obviously you and I around this table simply have no idea how any kind of garment, especially leather, is going to react to tsaras. And Rava maybe had a tradition, not clear how he knew this as well. But tsaras came to megufe kaparcha, it comes from the body. So mechalchal alei, right, mechalchal, we have that word in the Megillah regarding Esther. So, right, it shakes it, it softens it, and it turns it into something which is soft. So Amaravi Kashli HaKashli. So Rava says, I'll tell you what, that doesn't even bother me. But Karmuksas is the Rachim Nenuvitanan Haisasha Or, No Salam Mayim Asha Techala. The Gemara says, but I'll tell you, Rava says, I'll tell you what bothers me, and that is, let's go back to that Mishnah Shabbos that we learned just a little bit earlier. Remember the Mishnah Shabbos? The Mishnah Shabbos says, pouring water onto your pillowcase. If it's a pillowcase that's made up of wool or linen or some sort of soft fabric, so you can't put water on it. That's out of the question. What you could do is you could take a shmata, a dry rag, and you could wipe it to get the filth off the pillowcase, and that's all you can do. But if the pillowcase is made up of leather, so then you can run water on it. Now, Rava says, now, if we can just envision a pillowcase made up of leather, how do we envision that? Is it hard or is it soft? Presumably, it's soft. And meanwhile, the Mishnah says you can run water on top of it. So, or no sin ala maima shetchala. Ela amarava, kol kibus deleis le kiskus, lo shme kibus. So the Gemara says, so Rava says, so I'll now suggest a new approach to our entire dilemma. And that is as follows. running water over leather. Now, it could be that he's referring to all garments. Hard to imagine, but let's limit it to just leather. If all we're doing is just pouring water on top of it, so that does not qualify as kibbutz. When it comes to leather, even a soft leather, you need to rub in order for this to qualify as kibbutz. That is now what Rav is suggesting. If that suggestion holds, that's an if, we'll continue tomorrow. If that suggestion holds, so then that means to say that the Mishnah now in Shabbos, we understand very well. Because the Mishnah in Shabbos says that you're allowed to run water over your soft leather pillowcase. We also understand the practice that Rav allowed his student to run water over his shoes on Shabbos. Just in other words, because just running water over your shoes on Shabbos, that is not considered kibbutz, because all you're doing is just running water. Rubbing would constitute kibbutz. Running water over it does not constitute kibbutz. So a lot of things are going to be clear if, in fact, this suggestion Rav is going to stand, that just running water on top of it is not going to qualify as kibbutz. We're in the middle of a discussion. We will conclude by the end of this discussion. We'll conclude, and we'll end with halacha by the beginning of tomorrow.